This is an ABC podcast.
Hello there, and welcome to Extra with me, Geraldine Doog. This morning, our June edition of A Foreign Affair.
To walk the road of peace, sometimes we need to be ready to climb the mountain of conflict.
Tommy said, Mr. President, you're wrong. Now that takes a lot of guts.
I'm for peace and quiet, Mr. Lute. It's why I came to the UN. Quiet diplomacy.
Yes, well, time now for A Foreign Affair, our once-a-month chat about developments outside our shores, where we normally ask our three guests to nominate an event or an idea that's resonated with them across whatever range they choose. But a slight variation this June, given the emphasis this month on the Australia-China relationship in its various forms, we plan to focus entirely on that issue because I think it's fair to say it'll be around for a while and the nuances will matter and we'll stop it being boring, so we'll try to air them, which is why I'm so pleased to welcome three distinguished guests, John Fitzgerald, Professor Emeritus at the Centre for Social Impact at the Swinburne University of Technology, a noted historian of China and of the diaspora, Richard McGregor, Senior Fellow for East Asia at the Lowy Institute, and his books include the highly acclaimed The Party, The Secret World of China's Communist Rulers, and Linda Jakobsen, Founding Director and Chief Executive Officer of China Matters, the think tank. She lived and worked in China for 22 years. Welcome to you all.
Thank you.
Now, to set the scene, here are two verdicts this past month about our interaction from people whose job it is to monitor things pretty closely. First, Foreign Affairs Minister Julie Bishop, followed by her shadow, Labor Senator Penny Wong.
The Australian government manages many bilateral relationships. We get the balance right. We work hard with our relationship with China because China is one of our most important economic, trade and investment partners. We work hard with relationships throughout the region.
What do I think the relationship with China needs? I think it needs consistency. I think it needs clarity about where our interests come together and where they differ. I think we need to ensure we have a sophisticated approach to managing difference as well as working together where we can. And we should always, as I previously said, approach China with respect and not fear. And I think what we've seen from the government to date is clumsiness, which has contributed to difficulties in the relationship.
Which makes you wonder whether, along with all the various conflicting commentaries from the national security networks and then business, whether the relationship's being caught up in our partisan domestic politics, the very thing that has worried some previous foreign affair contributors. Maybe a quick comment from you all on this. First to you, John Fitzgerald.
Yes, to some degree. I note that Penny Wong's comments are that these differences between the parties and the way in which the current government has gone about its relation with China are contributing to the difficulties. But she's not saying we don't recognise there are difficulties. There are underlying difficulties, I think, that both parties recognise. The difference between them appears to be one of approach.
Yeah, and how would you answer that, Richard? Do you think, this is what I was warned of in an earlier foreign affair, you know, for goodness sake, don't let it get caught up in the weeds of our partisan politics, otherwise you never rescue it.
It already has been caught up in the weeds of partisan politics. You know, the Dastyari affair was very heated and that, you know, China was at the centre of that, and that was an attempt to, you know, make the Labor Party pay a price for an indiscretion of one of their centres. So I think it's already there, and I think in some respects at the moment, it's being dialed back. I guess the big question is whether it gets dialed up again in the lead up to the next election.
Yeah, and how do you see that, Linda?
Well, one of the things I noticed in that clip from Foreign Affairs Minister Julie Bishop was the emphasis on how important the PRC is for trade and investment from the point of view of Australia. Now, in my view, that is really a part of the problem. That's part of the old narrative of what China means for Australia. The new narrative, the looking forward narrative, is not to emphasize that it's just about trade and investment. The People's Republic of China is going to be hugely important for Australia, culturally, in the technology space, the security space, and of course also for trade and investment.
Now, what are you getting at there?
I'm getting at that in order for us to have a more robust and realistic policy, how to deal with a much more assertive, powerful China, we first must have a clear, comprehensible storyline that shows the way forward. And above all, explains to the Australian public why, despite our likes and our dislikes, we simply need to find a way to get along with the PRC.
And you don't think that we're doing that?
No, I don't. Because I think one of the problems at the moment is that we're living in the old world, hoping, wishing that the United States will remain the predominant power in this region. And the narrative about China fits into that old storyline. And the new storyline puts China front and center as the aspiring and soon to be, I think soon meaning 2, 3, 4 decades, predominant power in our region.
It's like a sort of white paper, is it?
An exercise of that kind, but I think it has to be much more concise. 10 pages would be something that politicians actually would read. And it has to, like I said, look forward at the realities of the PRC, the good, the bad, and the ugly.
John, does that appeal to you at all?
It makes a lot of sense. Australia hasn't really had a consistent narrative around China for some time. I guess under the Howard government, what's now being called the Howard Consensus, that we could trade with China and manage our security and other relations with the United States, and we wouldn't need to choose, is well behind us. It's very clear that not so much that we have to choose, but that our options are fairly limited. Others may decide that it's time for us to choose. That Howard Consensus that we can trade with China, and that's what China's all about, is inadequate to explain the fact that China is here for the long term. Australia is in China's sphere of influence. We're not going away. China's not going away. China's a land of opportunity and promise. And we need a story that explains how Australia fits into China's narrative and how China fits into ours.
Mm. Is it doable, Richard McGregor?
Well, not in a simple sense. You know, I think any narrative, if that's the word we're going to use, or any relationship is going to have to be a relationship that accommodates tensions, because if we are, and, you know, it's a persuadable argument, moving from one set of, one period of history into another one, one period where a democracy holds sway in the region to where an authoritarian country holds sway in the region, a period over which just about every country in the region is going to have to renegotiate its relationship with China on terms, by the way, which are quite unclear at the moment. I mean, China is still rising, so you can't kind of, you know, set a sort of a relationship now which is going to hold into the future. And I think in some respects, I mean, there's lots to criticise about how the government's handled the relationship, but there's lots to criticise on the Chinese side as well. We don't hear so much about that, frankly. And I think we're sort of in the early rough stages of renegotiating our position in the world. But this is something that's going to go on for a long time. There's no kind of simple reset here.
Well, another person making his feelings known, and it's quite rare, is the Chinese ambassador to Australia, Cheng Yi'e. He attended a political conference in Canberra last week, and he did offer some candid remarks, suggesting some in Australia had a Cold War mentality about China. Here he is just after the conference, responding to questions from the media.
The Cold War is over, but still some people's mindset is still there. Their body maybe have moved into the new century, but their thinking is still there.
Who is thinking that way? Are our leaders thinking that way?
Well, from what I have read, from what I have heard, I mean, that's on the ground.
And here's an entirely different perspective offered by Andrew Hastie, the Liberal MP who chairs the Parliamentary Joint Committee on Intelligence and Security. He made some comments in particular which displeased China. Let's hear from him.
In Australia, it is clear that the Chinese Communist Party is working to covertly interfere with our media and also influence our political processes.
We hope certain people in Australia can stop making such kind of remarks which are harmful to China's image and China-Australia relations.
Yeah, that was the Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson. So, John Fitzgerald, how deep are these clashes potentially?
Well, at this point, it seems from Ambassador Chen's remarks that there's no acknowledgement on China's part that it's engaging in any kind of behaviour in Australia that can be construed as political interference or interfering in the media in any way and so on. And China's failure to recognise that is itself a problem. It follows that if China doesn't recognise that is the problem, then it sees what's happening in Australia as imaginary and phantasmagoric. In fact, it was described as a phantasm in one of the embassy's press releases. On the China side, the remedy for a fantasy is, you know, take a Bex and a good lie down. Think about what you're doing. Rethink your mindset, so to speak. Mm. On the Australian side, it's, let's try and get our house in order here. We have some issues, not just in relation to China, but in relation to all countries of the world. If they wish to interfere in our political processes, overstep the line. On the Australian side, there's a sense that, well, this debate's not really about China. It's about Australia putting its house in order at long last. And on the Chinese side, saying, well, we don't understand why we're being singled out when we do our so-called interference in Australia is no different from that of anybody else. I think until China recognises that, in fact, what it is doing is not normal or routine diplomacy, then we're likely to have a problem. We're not likely to find an easy solution, let me put it that way.
Are you talking about interference in telecommunications or what? I mean, that's what people are grappling with?
It does seem to me that the public conversation has really been about donors making contributions to political parties, to universities, buying up media, and these donors having links to China. They're by no means all Chinese citizens, but they have links to China. Now, they rightly argue that what they're doing is within the law. There is nothing illegal about making a contribution to a political party or to university or what have you, and of course there's not. But there seems to be a failure to recognise that Australia is governed by convention and ethics as well as by law. And to some degree, I think there's been a bit of naivete on the part of Chinese agencies, governments and companies in recruiting senior Australian ministers, in making donations to universities and contributing to political parties and expecting some kind of return that's over and above what's ethically acceptable in this country. And so the debate, in a way, has been around those issues rather than about legality. So I think the ambassador can rightly say, well, what's going on here? Nothing illegal. Everybody's obeying the law. I think there's a lack of understanding about how liberal democracy works and the place of law in liberal democracy and the place of a free press.
Richard McGregor?
I mostly agree with John in that respect, but there is also a covert element to it. You know, I think the Chinese Communist Party talks quite openly about Chinese at home and abroad being sort of bearers of Chinese values, so-called. And in the case of the Communist Party, that means Chinese political values or the current Chinese political imperatives of Beijing. So that means that they would hope and expect and in some cases put pressure on and provide incentives for the communities to support China's views on, say, the South China Sea and the like, which is the one which came to the fore during the Dastyari period. Mm. So, yes, there's a little bit of naivety in Australia. There's a little bit about how liberal democracies handle a different system. But I don't think it's just that the Chinese don't know what they're doing. They've sort of blundered in a different system. I think there's more to it than that.
Meaning?
Well, I think there's a conscious attempt to influence the system, both covertly and overtly, in ways which benefit Chinese political purposes.
Linda?
I, too, agree with most of what John said, but I do disagree that this is not about China. I think this is about China, though, of course, I acknowledge...
This is all the foreign interference laws and everything.
Yes. Mm. I certainly agree that there are other countries besides China who are trying to interfere and do interfere in Australian society and in Australia's political system. But I think the main gist of the public debate about the foreign interference laws has been about China. I think there's broad political support for the new laws. I think also the reason why it is about China is because China is rising so rapidly. As Richard said earlier, we're in a very evolving situation, and it's very difficult to grapple with this rapidly rising power, which is so different from ours. It has a political system that we do not approve of, and at the same time, it is trying in various ways to influence Australian society. And where, like you said, Geraldine, do you draw the line between what is perfectly legitimate work of a diplomat in another country, promoting a positive image of that country, and when is it interfering in the political system.
Can I move on? Because in a way, the debate over Huawei, the Chinese telecommunications giant, and its ambitions here absolutely encapsulate these dilemmas or these wider tensions. John Lord, Huawei's local boss, mounted a spirited defence of the company at the National Press Club this week, acknowledging that the politics here could be temporarily tough, but saying there was a lot at stake for Australia.
In saying no to one of the leading 5G suppliers in the world, what are we really doing? This is not just a tough political decision. This is a long-term technology decision that could impact our growth and our productivity for generations to come.
And, you know, Richard McGregor, what was fascinating about his appearance, was that he went on to insist, after a question, that were the Australian arm of Huawei ever asked by the Chinese government to hand over sensitive details about its Australian telecommunications operations, that he would say no, that Chinese law did not, to the best of his knowledge, cover Australian operations. I thought it made a very tricky, tricky challenge.
Well, I think the question he's referring to there, or that was referred to him, is about the Chinese law which compels all companies at the direction of the government to cooperate in Chinese intelligence activities. And I guess he's saying, well, that doesn't apply in Australia. And I've no doubt that John Lord probably would say no to something like that. But, you know, he might never have to be asked. I mean, if you look at US telecommunications equipment, and we learned more about this with Snowden, there's all sorts of backdoors built into all manner of equipment. Would Huawei be the same?
I also read that, you know, the British, one of the things that's been offered is that the British, I think in about, 2011 actually, agreed for Huawei to supply these related telecommunications for their 5G. But unnamed national security spokespeople have said subsequently, if they were really given the opportunity again now, they'd say no.
I mean, that's the most interesting part about it. Huawei has a model in the UK. That's just an intelligence partner of the US and Australia. And the Huawei model in the UK allows the UK intelligence services to check Huawei equipment before it's put into the network. And I've never seen anybody in the UK regret that publicly. In Australia, the intelligence services apparently, and very sadly, like John, I haven't been briefed as well.
I wish you had been, by the way, so you could tell us.
the UK system doesn't work and it won't work for us. Now, obviously, let's not be naive. There's pressure from the Americans on us not to take Huawei. You know, but I
which
would
John
like
Lord
to know
alluded
more.
To, by the way.
Yeah, and you know, and this is in some respects a competing industrial policies. There's lots of levels to this, but I'm not saying John Lord's naive. He probably would say no, but I don't think that's the end of the issue.
Mm. See, John Fitzgerald, there's also, more comes out every day. There was a piece in the Financial Review during the week that ASPI, pretty anti, seems to be very worried about China, the Australian Strategic Policy Institute, is worried about academic collaborations in Australia, particularly around modernising our defence capability and how we collaborate with visiting Chinese researchers, and that this is something that they think could really, especially between the University of Technology in Sydney and China's Electronics Technology Group Corporation, which is a state-owned defence conglomerate. Are you concerned about this?
Well, if we are concerned about it, we need to be able to talk about it publicly. And I hope China doesn't take offence that we're talking about it again. Okay, just come back to my point. There is a misunderstanding on China's part about how liberal democracies work and that we do debate these kinds of things in public. It's not happening. It doesn't just happen behind the scenes as it does in China. And yes, I am concerned about academic collaborations with China insofar as they're not on the public record. Once they are on the public record and we can discuss them and we can talk about whether it's appropriate or not for a particular university to be working with a university in China closely linked to the armaments industry, then we'll be in a position to make a judgment as a community about this. And we don't need laws to manage this. Universities are self-governing institutions. They have reputations to protect. And if they're alert to risks in some of these relationships and the public comes on board and saying, well, we're not too happy with that, then universities need to act appropriately.
Another point of tension in recent days has been over Taiwan, a thriving economy in its own right, one of our top 10 export destinations, and of course the place that broke away from the mainland when the communists under Mao won in 1949. China seems to increasingly want its sovereignty over Taiwan acknowledged very explicitly, and for instance, it insisted on changes to Qantas's flight descriptions. Here's its CEO, Alan Joyce.
Airlines don't decide what countries call, the governments do.
Now, this is not just a theoretical discussion, John. I thought that was an extraordinary development. A big company conceded to China's assertiveness. Is this what we can expect for the future relationship?
Yes, I think the future has arrived in this sense. It's long been the case that Australian governments and many universities and so on don't refer to Taiwan as an independent country, but commercial firms and others have been free to do so if they wish. What China's doing now is indicating it's prepared to leverage its economic power, not only over governments, but about private corporations, foreign as well as domestic, wherever, throughout the world. And that's part of a broader effort on China's part to leverage economic power for geostrategic goals. And we're seeing it every day in one form or another. The Taiwan case is just one among many. I should add that I believe in an interview with The Australian, the Chinese ambassador said Australian trade could suffer if we didn't re-establish friendly relations with China. That's another threat, a form of intimidation, shall we say, in which China's seeking at the present time to leverage its economic power to secure political benefits.
I did hear that 36 international airlines have been similarly approached by China. What some of them do is they use Taiwan outside China, but when they're describing it inside China, they use it as part of the mainland. So I suppose that's a compromise, Linda.
Well, I think on the Taiwan issue, over the last 3.5 decades, there have been huge amount of compromises done with the use of language and so on. But on the Taiwan issue, I would like to say that I think besides the question of PRC and CPC influence and interference in our society, the Taiwan issue will be the most challenging for the Australian government. I think it's correct to presume that Xi Jinping does want to move forward with at least political talks beginning during the time that he is in power for the Taiwan and the mainland to reunify. It's going to be a very difficult situation for the rest of the world. How to deal with this, obviously, it depends on many factors. But I always say that we forget Taiwan or we ignore Taiwan at our peril. I think it's really important.
We should add here that, of course, this is about not about Australia, but about Taiwan. We've got a sort of anti-unification government in Taiwan, which has refused to meet certain conditions set by China. So China is turning the screws on Taiwan in multiple ways. I'm afraid it's not really a thriving economy anymore. It's been struggled for many years and is going to struggle more as China turns up the heat. And I think over time, the issue is going to become very much more difficult.
Look, I mean, final question to you all, really. I wonder if we're going to be free to enjoy China. Has it all become rather problematic, John?
Well, Australians on the whole are pretty well disposed towards China. All the surveys show that. It's often said that a test of a good relationship is how well it copes with difficulties. I think there's goodwill on Australia's side. I hope there's goodwill on China's side.
We have to have a clear view of the good, the bad and the ugly, but it really includes the positives. Much too little is talked about what PRC economic dynamism has done for our region, kept it stable, all the amazing scientific achievements that are expected over the next 10, 20, 30 years, achievements and breakthroughs that will also benefit Australians. I think China has amazing things to offer that is not discussed because of a sort of an anti-China slant to the discussion at the moment about the rise of the PRC.
And final word to you, Richard McGregor.
Yes, I'm going to slightly qualify that. You know, I do feel a bit grim. I think we shouldn't say anti-China. I think we should say anti-CCP. And I know, you know, the categories get collapsed in a way that it makes it difficult to distinguish. You know, China is a fascinating, dynamic, fantastic place. But it's where, you know, if as its influence spreads, as it becomes more powerful, you know, we've enjoyed economic China. Political China is not going to be nearly as much fun. And we should be ready for that.
Thank you all very much indeed. Linda Jacobson, Richard McGregor and John Fitzgerald, I appreciate your time on our June Foreign Affair.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And Linda Jacobson is from China Matters, where she's CEO. Richard McGregor, whose book The Party is highly acclaimed, and I urge you to go out and buy it. And John Fitzgerald, who is Professor Emeritus at the Centre for Social Impact at Swinburne's University of Technology. Your thoughts most welcome, or further ideas as to how we can cover this story. But have a good week. Bye-bye for now.